Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Talking Comics. Welcome to Talking Comics, episode 277. I'm your host, Mara Wood, and I'm here with Bob Ryer.
Happy Pi Day!
And Steve Say.
Why, hello.
I forgot it was Pi Day until just now. The day's not over yet for me. I can still go get pie.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you both a question.
Okay.
When you hear Pi Day, when you hear National Pi Day, what is the first thought that comes into your mind? Is it numbers or is it food?
Numbers.
Well, okay. It's food, but I know why we have food.
You know what I mean? Because they're
interesting.
Round.
Yeah, like interesting. When someone says Thanksgiving, the first thing you think of is like your favorite Thanksgiving food, but you cognitively know the reason why we're eating my favorite food is because we're supposed to be thankful. So,
yeah.
First thing I think of is pie, but we're eating pie because it's 3.14. So.
Or 22 sevenths. So also, July 22nd should be Pi Day, too.
Yes.
Bob, have you seen Darren Aronofsky's Pi? I know you haven't seen it, Mara. You've seen like five movies.
True.
Have you seen it?
No, we used to throw it on in the old 112 video here and there. I never actually took the thing home and watched it. Should I?
Yeah. I would, okay. I would, if you enjoy Aronofsky's kind of like otherworldly qualities, weird little quirks that he has as a director, it's definitely cool to see the seed of what later becomes like his larger movies. Okay. But it gets real weird to the point of almost being unwatchable about three quarters of the way in.
Yeah, but then, that. Yeah.
Right. But then it finishes really well and kind of makes up for that like 20-minute gap.
Okay.
So it's kind of an endurance thing. Like, how weird do you want to get? So I think it's worth watching. But it did take me a few tries to actually make it through the whole thing. I will admit that.
Hmm.
So and also, I like pie. What's your favorite flavor of pie, Mara?
Cherry or apple? I like fruit pies.
Okay. I would go probably with either classic apple or blueberry. No, cranberry.
Mm.
Yeah,
interesting.
Cranberry.
Interesting. Bob, do you have a favorite?
What about you, Bob?
It's apple pie. Make my own.
Nice.
So, got to be an apple pie.
Yeah.
With vanilla ice cream, of course, on the top.
Ooh. Mm.
Sounds good.
All right, we should just let's just shut this thing down now and go get some pie.
No, it's snowing sideways here where I am, Steve. I don't know about out in Shirley, but here it's snowing sideways.
It's not doing a damn thing out here, Bob.
Yeah, with the rain snow line of winter storm Sarika, whatever it was today, Stella. It's winter storm Stella. Hey, Stella.
Somebody has to do it.
So, yeah, it sort of went right through here. So this morning, it snowed like the Dickens and then went almost instantly to sleety, icy, hideous rain that made a crust of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually washed most of the snow away, only now it's starting up again and there's already about a half an inch on the back of my car.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds gross.
Yeah. Yep. And if you were north and west of us, even a little bit on Long Island, you got 8 to 10 inches, and if you're up by sort of where Melissa is, which is about an hour north of the city, they had about 2 feet.
Mother Nature's got to have one last word.
2 feet.
Well, yeah, it was two days ago was the anniversary of the blizzard of 1888 that was, I think, 29 inches of snow in New York.
Oh, damn. So,
yeah, it's winter's not over till the end of this month, and even then, you can get a surprise.
I mean, we even had flakes down here for like 5 minutes. And then, of course, it's all gone. But
yeah, and then it was 70 again, right?
Yes. Well, it was supposed to be 70 this weekend, but it's in the 30s or 40s right now.
Do you get really excited when you see snow?
No, I hate the cold.
Ah, yes.
I see snow, I'm like, no, go away. And now that the nature of my job is when I start testing on a kid, it's a timeline. I have to have everything done by a certain day. And that includes holidays, weekends, snow days. So if snow days show up at my work and I can't get to work to see the kid, I lose testing days.
Ooh.
Yeah. Whoa. So every time I see it starts to snow, I'm like, please just hold off until the weekend. Just hold off until the weekend.
Yeah.
I need to see this kid today. So
for us here in the Northeast, snow and winter is what makes spring so nice. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, look, the trees are blooming again. And you can actually walk outside without a scarf on and a hat and all the rest of it.
Well, let's dive into some comic talk today. We're going to start off with Gotham Academy, number 7.
Okay, well, this one is the usual crew. It's Fletcher, Clunan, Kershaw, Adam Archer on pencils. And the mystery of Amy is revealed, maybe? Question mark? Dot, 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 dot. It is the... Colton's still going to be expelled. The detective club has split up to try to find ways to get him out of here. And they're all really worried about Olive because she's not quite acting like herself. Although Pomeline Fritch seems to have her own mission. You know, Olive will understand. And of course, Colton sneaks off with her because he's always looking for a big payday somewhere along the way. Back at the academy itself, we have a great conversation with Olive and Amy. We get mystery upon mystery, lots of check-ins. All the threads from almost all the way back to the start of this series is trying to get put back into play. Great twist, wonderful art, fabulously apt and marvelous cliffhanger. I can't say too much else without spoiling. There's some major shenanigans in this issue. Let's put it that way. What'd you think, Mar?
I loved it. I think this is my favorite Gotham Academy issue in a long time. Not that the others have been bad or anything. It's just that this one stands out pretty significantly in terms of the way the plot developed, but also the way the characters interacted with each other when Olive did a big bad thing and kind of everyone just rushing forward and revealing what they know or what they don't know.
Yeah.
And seeing those pieces together, seeing a favorite Gotham Knight show up, and it's a good issue. It's a good issue.
Yeah. I've been on this from the start. I mean, we had checked in on some of Carl Kershaw's other work. We knew Brendan Fletcher and Becky Cloonan, certainly. So it seemed a great little, it's Scooby-Doo, Buffy in Gotham, we all fell in love with Maps instantly, of course. Not that we don't love Olive and all the rest, but I mean, Maps is just awesome. And I thought the yearbook issues were I don't want to say weak, but just not what I wanted. And coming back for the second semester, I think the book has really picked up. And now with some of the reveals from this issue, I want to go back and read these first 6 issues again, now knowing what everyone thinks we know.
Yeah. Oh, it's like that, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely, it's like that.
It changes the story.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, no, I'm about, like, 2 issues behind. I heard that something went down. Like, there was a big reveal for a character and whatnot. But I'm like, yeah, I got to catch up.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to love this one.
Yeah,
that was next on my list. I made it through a couple of things this week. I was very proud of myself, but that's up there.
good. Let's stay in the Bat universe and touch on Detective Comics number 952 real quick.
Indeed.
Bob, do you want to give us a quick synopsis?
No, let's have Steve jump on this one.
Okay, so you guys actually talked about this issue a couple of weeks ago when it came out. This was the big oversized issue. that started the League of Shadows arc that's going on in Detective right now.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Because we're on 952. That was 950, the big anniversary. Yep.
Right, right. So I read that and really, really enjoyed the hell out of it. I loved, I'm going to murder this name. I apologize so much. Marcio Takara?
Yes.
I believe. Okay. Yeah. And Dean White on colors, just a tremendous, tremendous team, on this book. Some of these full pages are just absolutely gorgeous. I like the reintroduction to Cassandra Cain and kind of like learning about her introverted, superheroing ways, and the way that she functions within the group is kind of like the silent observer. Shiva coming into the mix is truly terrifying. In my estimate, she's nasty. Like, you almost don't even get to see what she does because she's already done it. And they make it look like it took 10 seconds for her to take out, you know, 14 armored dudes.
With her bare hands.
Right. And her gloves are, like, you know, drenched in blood. And she's just kind of, like, gritting teeth. And I'm like, man, like, I don't know what just happened. But it was probably nasty because those guys don't look like they're getting up. So, I like her a lot. I like the way that Cassandra expresses herself through dance in some of the pages and kind of incorporates her ballet training into her fighting style. I love the idea. I've always liked the idea. I've seen it used in other things where they take like the ballet or dance training and they apply it to like assassins and things like that, just in terms of like keeping up with like your being healthy and your body being toned and able to stretch and do all of these things. So
let me just jump. I'm just jump into something right there because I have to. It's just me. I have to. If you remember the old television show, our old friends, you know, Bert and Adam, but Yvonne Craig, who played Batgirl, she was a dancer, and her ballet moves are what they use for Batgirl's fighting style.
Really?
So who knows where it came from here?
Man, log that one away for when we do a Talking Comics trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Timestamp. And it was interesting also kind of moving away from 950 and going into 51 and 52 that the artwork takes on more of a like a horror bent to it. And so you still have Shiva running around and kind of messing things up for the whole Bat family. But there's also this Joker angle that's happening kind of in the background. And I don't know quite what to make of it. I don't think that it's him. And I want to hear Bob's thoughts first, but I'll pose a question to everybody at the end.
Well, see, I was going to ask that question of you and Mara. Aren't there three Jokers running around or something in the DC universe at this point?
Oh my God, you're right. I keep forgetting that.
So I could be, but it may not be the real one, the central figure.
That's a really good point. Damn it. I didn't think of that.
So you don't know, but it could also be manipulation. Again, they tried in the last issue to manipulate the world into thinking sillily, if there was such a word, that Batman could have killed the mayor of Gotham City, despite evidence of the contrary over the last, even if only in these books, 5 years.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Love Shiva. Love, we still have the team going. We got a couple of nice Clayface moments here. We're pulling into play what his new anxieties are about using his powers. As a plot, seems a little refried to me in that it's another secret society. We just came off the whole colony thing with Jacob Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, all right, we've already done the Court of Owls. And it's, okay, they're good stories. But if we do a lot of those all the time, you know, we have had a couple of respites, which is good in between. But jumping right into it, I think if we had Shiva solo and building towards where we're headed here, just even a couple of more issues, since they do come out every 2 weeks, just a little more space might have helped, but still enjoying it, though. Yeah. lot less Kate here, but she's got her own book coming, so it's okay, I guess.
We will live.
I know, but I love the dynamic of her as part of this group. What do you think, Mar?
I've been liking this new League of Shadows. I think there's a good point to there being too many secret societies. Like, I guess everyone has to be a member of one in order to be effective against Batman and his, team. And I really like Shiva. I'm interested in seeing how this plays out, where these characters are going to end up, and what are they going to do with her? Mm-hmm. How are they going to deal with her threats and things like that?
So what was your question, Steve?
Are you enjoying, because I've noticed that through this series, we're getting kind of a more compassionate Batman. I don't know that this is necessarily a spoiler, but Batman's been kind of like doing this throughout the series, and that's kind of my point. The moment at the end of the book with him and Cassandra where she's kind of coming to grips with everything, and she turns around and asks him a question, and they just like hug it out. I love seeing those moments with Batman and the characters that bring that out of him. He doesn't do that with everybody, you know, but there's like this odd kinship going on between those two characters that I think is kind of happening in the underbelly of this comic that I think is really good and just deserves to have something, a spotlight pointed on it for a little bit. But
he and Kate have something interesting going on too. There's a rivalry, but it's friendly.
Yeah.
But competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw in those Batman issues with Selina that we can get back to that too. So maybe it's just, this is the rebirth Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And he isn't all the grim and gritty New 52 version.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I like Detective a lot. It's been great. I think there's a lot to be said about all the little things that are happening. Like we just mentioned a couple of them, and those are all the subplots. Like the assassin thing might be a little bit played in the scheduling of these stories and stuff like that. But so much of it is really good. I think it amounts to a pretty good Batman book.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's shift gears and go to Superman's corner. Let's actually start with the Action Comics that Steve read and kind of get a recap of that before going into the tie-in to that.
I'll do my best. These were a lot of issues. You got issues numbers 969 to 975 that I read. I said last week that I was going to go back and I was going to grab the missing issues of Action, so I did that, and I'm really glad that I did, because they set up a lot of stuff for what's happening now. And this whole Lex Superman thing that they're establishing since the rebirth and kind of, you know, framing their relationship and stuff like that. The idea or the act of predictive justice comes in with the characters Lakal and Zaid, kind of knowing the future and going to grab Lex Luthor, saying that he's going to be this dark side level genocidal maniac given enough time and the right situation. So they come to execute him, and Superman's like, yo, we don't do that.
Yeah. Well, what does Carol Danvers think of that?
Right. So like, I'm reading this thing and I'm just in my head, I'm like, hello, Marvel.
Yep.
Hello. Not so subtle commentary on, you know, these things. So that was interesting. And I thought like the Luther conclusion to that whole thing, it was a little predictable, but I like the idea that it emphasizes like the reader's belief, at least mine, in the new Superman, and that like he can get the job done. And we also don't know if we can trust Luther still, which is always kind of, you know, the thing with his character. You don't know where to land as much good as he tries to do and tries to show you that he's a good person. There's just too much of a history there that you don't trust him. So like, I really attach myself to the struggle that Superman has with trusting this dude, because he knows better, you know. And you know, if it's like 2 issues from now or 16 issues from now, he's totally gonna screw everybody over and we're gonna be back to square one. So but anyway, they moving ahead into the more recent issues, the curtain is blown back on who the other Clark Kent is, and has been since the start of this rebirth stuff. and I will not reveal it here.
But it's good.
I wouldn't do that to you. It's good. It's good. Really good. It's really interesting, and it kind of made me want to go back and look for signs, because now that I know what to look for with who the character turns out to be, I was like, ooh, yeah, that was, now that I think about it, that was weird. That was a strange, I don't want to say what it is, because I don't want to ruin it, but really cool. Like, and they fake you out too. Like the book fakes you out several times before they actually reveal who it is. And it was just fun to turn the pages and be like, all right, who the hell is going to pop up now? Oh, look, it's so-and-so. And they're doing, oh, no, it's not. It's the other guy, whatever. So really, really cool conclusion slash reveal to what's been going on. I don't know necessarily what it means or why. But, I mean, I'm already into both action and Superman proper at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to find out one way or the other. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Great art. Love the art, particularly in the last issue. I'd have to find the artist.
Monk. What's his name? Doug Monk.
What did you think, Mara?
I really liked this issue of Action Comics. I really liked the backup story by Paul Dini as well.
I can't
talk about it because it's about who Clark Kent is. If that makes sense. But it's a really, really interesting setup, and it kind of gives all the background information on exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, so the Action Comics Superman Reborn stuff has been really good. And then Bob had mentioned, like, do I need to read it in order to understand Superwoman? Bob, I don't know.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to have much of a tie-in to Superwoman. I feel like it's just plastered with Superman Reborn on the cover just to get people to pick it up.
Okay. Well, that helps. That saves me some money.
Mm-hmm.
But, there are different versions of Superman around, and one of them's in this book.
Mm-hmm.
we'll end up talking about that here, I'm sure. This is now the eighth issue of Superwoman's, Phil Jimenez and Jack Herbert. And it's the aftermath of Lena Luthor's attack on, everything, with her bizarro clones and everything else. And Lana's in a bad way with her powers even before having to expend tons and tons of energy. She's now may or may not be in a coma, may or may not be inside some machine, may or may not be free electrons floating around somewhere having hallucinations, or she isn't, or it's another world and she's talking to dead characters and her parents and her brother and a Superman and Lois, and then maybe another Lois and a ghost Lois, and I'm confused. Despite there being about 4,000 words in this book, mm-hmm. I couldn't quite wrap my head around exactly where we're headed.
Yeah.
I think there's one more Phil Jimenez issue, I think, is how this works, because the ending, actually there are two endings. There's a lovely two-page ending that filled my heart with sort of glee, and then there are three endings. Then there's, the one that came a page before that with some explosion-y stuff, and then an epilogue that puts a lie to all of them? Help, Mara. You're my only hope.
I don't have an answer.
Oh, come on.
Other than it just seems like hopefully everything will be tied together next issue or two. Hopefully next issue. The two-page spread you're talking about is fantastic. And it was kind of what I've been wanting from the series the whole time.
Yes.
But it's nice to get it eight issues in, I guess. Like we've mentioned before, once Phil's gone, I'm gone off of Superwoman, just because it hasn't quite been what I was looking for. Which, going into it, I was looking for a really cool Lois Lane as a superhero comic.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Lana Lang, but she doesn't feel too much like a superhero either.
Reluctantly so, or fighting against it, despite who she's surrounded with her entire life, it does seem methinks she doth protest too much.
Yeah. And she made a good point in the comic about the relationship between Clark and Lois, saying that our entire world hinges on the relationship between you two. We could all be dying, but if Lois is fine, it's okay. You know, or if Lois is in trouble, then pity the person who's causing it.
Well, if we go back to some of these crises we've had over the years where the only people who survived were the Earth 2 Superman and Lois, and was it the Earth Prime Superboy in some pocket universe somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. Then we can bring him back every now and again. But maybe he'll show up too. I don't know. A little gray on the side of the hair, or maybe the bird from Kingdom Come. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because is it maybe the Superman main book that it's the birth of the Supermen? Aren't they all around from every different universe?
Yeah.
The Red Sun one.
The main title.
Super Bunny. And
had a... what was it called? Multiplicity? I think it was the arc.
Yeah.
And so they did have the multiple Supermen storyline going on there.
So. Confusing.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting times.
Yeah. It's comics. So let's hit on Wonder Woman real quick. Because we have a new issue and a new trailer this week.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So... let's start with the new issue, God Watch Part 2 or 3? I cannot keep track now. Part 2.
Two. I think it's 2, yes.
Rucka and Bilqui Evely. Or Evely. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
I go with Evely.
Evely. We get some fallout from the Dr. Cyber attack that happened in the previous issue with... Veronica Kale's friend Adriana, who took on that mantle more or less as she tried to attack Wonder Woman, and it failed. And of course, Veronica is grasping at straws trying to save her daughter from, basically Hades' children who are reading scary bedtime stories to children. We get some Barbara Minerva as she is inspired by Diana's existence to look for more gods and look for more living myths, basically. I like how these things are starting to tie together even more. Seeing this older storyline and the current storyline just kind of converge on one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's people that are talking about the slow buildup and so many supporting characters, and we're getting to focus on them. I really, as opposed to the New 52, where it seemed like it was just in a way to diminish Diana, here, Diana's presence imbues every panel with the power because she's the one everyone's talking about, thinking about. So even if she's not on the page, she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so having these supporting characters, it gives her a greater set of friends, rogues, a storyline that can span now the past and our present. Really, as you're saying, they're now seeing what's happening with Barbara and Veronica, and now what's happened in our present story, how it all is linking together. I know Greg is contracted for 24 issues. I sure hope he's staying.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's only 6 issues down the pike here. And I'm sure he can wrap it up, but I don't want it to wrap up. I want this, once all the pieces are back together, to see where this explodes to. Look, Nicola Scott was fantastic on this book, and she needs to be commended for what she helped Greg do here.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made a wonderful choice in Ms. Evely. Whose work I had seen in some other books, some of the Avengers books, and what she did with David F. Walker on Chef. And that 2-page spread where Veronica and Dr. Cyber are trying to keep Diana busy is is a masterful piece of work of Diana with all her power being used to do all these amazing things, and it effortlessly flows across an entire page. It could be written, it seems like, any direction you choose. Just really, really special. Loving it. Steve, what's your take on this issue?
I mean, I loved it. I had some catching up to do. I actually read 12 through 18 this past week. Yeah. So I saw the Ares stuff. Man, that panel where Ares is, let's just say, no longer a part of the story was incredible. I posted a picture of it on my Twitter account if you guys want to go back and see what it is. Really, really spectacular stuff. I have to admit, though, and this, it had the opposite effect on me, that reading it in a lump like that, going back and forth between the two stories, almost got a little confusing after a few of them, where like I kind of just wanted to stay in one for a while and read them straight through, maybe like, you know, A to C to wherever. Mm-hmm. But obviously I didn't do that because I go in number order. But in terms of the series continuing to be amazing, that's exactly what it is. It's a very tragic Wonder Woman tale, like overall. With all, like, we were talking a little bit about Detective, about like all the little things that are happening in it. Like, we got that cool little origin of Veronica going, you know, into the machine, and that goes wrong, and then she's reborn as this kind of AI, like omnipotent AI character, kind of like a classic origin villain bent to it that I thought was really cool. Like, sometimes you take those things for granted, but when characters come into their stories, sometimes I like to step back and take note of it. And I just thought that was very classic and very cool, the way that Greg and everybody on the art set that up. You guys were talking about cool art on pages. There's a page about like 18 pages into issue number 18 where Ronnie's standing in the rain. Like, she's kind of standing looking out her window.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. And those first four panels are so gorgeous. Like, you could see like the contemplation just burrowing through her soul as she's standing there looking out the window, trying to decide what to do about Wonder Woman and her faceless child and all of these things that are coming crashing down around her.
And the dialogue that goes with this, I mean, we're talking a lot about the book, and it should be, because all these little things are vital to what's been the rebirth of this greatest superheroine of all. Mm-hmm. When you go back to back on a couple of pages where you've got a line that you missed my wedding, you know, and the follow up, and I won't say anything else, and then to hear what Veronica is saying, you know, what have I done to Adriana, to Dr. Minerva, to Diana? It's like, wow. You know, all these characters are getting their due, and they're all multi-layered, fascinating people from whatever side they're coming at the story from, good, bad, or neutral. You want to know more about them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of a Lazarus feel to it as well, I think.
As far as like the layers?
Yeah.
Or like the threads between the characters?
I think the threads between the characters and the relationships of the characters. Greg Rucka has a way of making characters feel like family, even if they aren't blood related, just in how close and how personal, you know, all of the things that they do to each other are. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got personal stock in this, whether it's, you know, the fight for justice, the fight for a child's face, the fight to, you know, to defy gods. Like, it's just all of this layered stuff going on that, for my memory, hasn't been in Wonder Woman for quite some time.
No, not to this degree.
So this is one of those, like, savor every issue and enjoy it while it lasts. Eventually it's gonna go in another direction, but this will always be here. Mm-hmm. And it will always be this, like, this incredible block of Wonder Woman where, like, you know, days were golden once again kind of thing.
We'll be talking about it as much as we talk about the Perez Wonder Woman run.
Here's I do have one question though before we move on. What the Demos and Deimos, are those, mm-hmm. that's their names?
Phobos, okay. and Deimos.
Dobo, okay. They're very patient, it seems. It seems like a lot of time has gone by since they've come into the picture, and I kind of have, like, I'm a little confused as to just how much time has passed. It seems like months and months that they've been torturing this kid.
Well, also, they are the offspring of Ares, so what is time?
I guess, but, like, what? How, with that, if that girl comes back from where she's been, how do we think that's going to go?
I think that'll be interesting, too.
Right?
I sense major villainy afoot.
I'm getting some Damien vibes.
Yeah.
Over here.
Yeah.
She's going to come back like The Exorcist.
Could be.
Spewing pea soup all over Wonder Woman.
let's hit on the new trailer real quick. Fantastic, first off. Mm. It's always good to get more Wonder Woman footage. Still apprehensive about some of the origin stuff. Don't know where it's going, but it's okay. It's okay. You know, part of me just has to accept that sometimes movies are just fan fiction for people with lots of money. Mm. And
okay. Are you talking about the emphasis of the sword and shield?
Well, more the emphasis on the role of Zeus. What is his role in this movie and in Diana's life?
Right, because that line, she must never know what she really is.
Mm-hmm.
If they were really brave, that could refer to her true origins. Which, mm-hmm. I was having a discussion with a fellow in a pub the other night, and he was saying, well, it's only us comic guys who care about the real origins. The movie, for the movie people who just want to go see the movie, it doesn't matter to them, and so they'll just do the other thing.
They'll do whatever's easiest.
But if we're going to say as neutral observers, is it any less nutty to have her be the daughter of Zeus than to be the daughter of an island of Amazons who create her with the gods' help from clay? No. No, it's no different in terms of levels of mythology. We're not saying she's Louise Brown, the test tube baby from 40 years ago. It's still mythology. So why not go with the real mythology from the books as created? You know, and it's that line could apply either way.
It can, and that's why I'm still apprehensive. Like, mm-hmm. I just know what they're going to go with because there is a precedent set for, you know, look, there's Zeus, that horn dog, coming out onto the earth. Look at all his weird offspring, and that's just kind of the story that most people are familiar with, and so that is the one I am anticipating being in the movie. I'll be surprised if they don't go that way, but. The trailer also gave us some young Diana.
Yeah. Lots of Themyscira was a lot of fun, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sword fighting?
Still a little too much sword play for me, but we got some really nice shots of the lasso in action, and the effect really works well. Mm-hmm. Really works.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So. And some Edda.
Yeah. More Edda. See what you think.
I think it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think it looks amazing. The new trailer is probably the best one that they've done. There was a couple of other follow-up things, clips and stuff that they showed. The movie, from what I've seen, looks more in line with what I've wanted from the DCEU from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited. Very excited. Yes. I'm also super apprehensive because, and I've said this in the past and I'm sticking to this because, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me like two or three more times and we gotta talk. DC has a way of cutting really nice trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Like those movies that I'm like, meh, and then they show me a trailer and I'm like, oh, all right. And then they show me like a few more and I'm like, oh, okay, let's go do this. And then I go to the movies and I come out and I'm sad. And so you know, not all aspects of those movies are bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just, for me personally, I have yet to walk away from one of the newer DC movies without having more problems with it, or more negatives than I do positives. The one that I like the most was Suicide Squad. You could ask me why elsewhere. I'm not going to go into it here. It's a long story. It's a really long story. But anyway, I had fun with that movie. I didn't really have fun with the other ones. That's kind of the Cliff's Notes version of that. But Wonder Woman looks great. It really does. It looks like pretty and gritty at the same time. It's kind of a nice balance. It doesn't look like it's trying to, you know, rain on my parade or tear my soul out and make it all, you know, monochrome and everything like that. I hope that it's good. I want to go to that movie. I'm really excited to see it. I want to walk away from that having, like, just super positive things to say about it. I don't need for them to get it all right, because I do understand that to a degree there's going to be like a level of compromise that I'm not going to be comfortable with for certain things. But so long as the spirit of the character is represented, that's going to be a win for me. And it just looks, visually, it looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So,
what I'm going to say on that front is echo all your thoughts, but to say that for a trailer, mm-hmm. you're going to have to show a lot of action-y stuff.
Of course.
And the idea of Wonder Woman as Princess Diana, the ambassador for peace and love and all that jazz, might not play well as a trailer.
Right.
True.
So you give us this, but if at the end of the day we get that Diana too, who can be the warrior and the ambassador for peace, speak softly and carry a big stick, as Teddy Roosevelt used to say, I'll be really happy, and I can put up with some of the other things. Right. I think.
Well, this trailer also had jokes in it, which is nice. A little bit of
humor. It's got jokes.
It's got some jokes. Yeah. So that's a good sign if you can have a little bit of laughs and, you know, Diana trying to walk off with a sword and shield. And
I'm excited to see DC do a movie that, you know, directed by a woman. They set this, you know, new milestone of that they were the first to have a female solo film. They followed through on their idea to get a female director, and I'm genuinely excited that that's finally happening and we're going to get to see it. And it's coming out soon.
Yeah.
It's coming out really soon. It's like, what, June?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, more so than, honestly, than any of the other movies that they've put out so far. I'm really genuinely excited to see this one.
You know what else struck me with this one? It was the use of a different set of musical score ideas and themes.
Mm-hmm.
That something more old-fashioned movie score wise and then go into that percussive thing as the logo came up was very, very affecting, I thought.
Mm-hmm. That guitar riff,
yeah, it's a good riff. It's a good riff.
They love it.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
yeah, so yeah, well,
excited.
Wonder Woman, yes. Real quick, Wonder Woman Psychology comes out April 4th.
Oh.
And it's available on Amazon April 17th.
Nice.
So just you can read it and then go watch the movie. And hopefully it will still apply to the stuff in the movie.
Yes, that is always going to be an issue. When was your last edit turned in?
January maybe.
Okay. Well,
did you celebrate? Or are you going to celebrate once it's out?
I think we're going to have a book release party.
Nice.
Mostly just so we can watch some Wonder Woman, Linda Carter episodes and make Wonder Woman themed drinks and things like that.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some Marvel books. All New Wolverine, number 18. Enemy of the State 2, part 6. Yeah, I know. Kimura is looking for, is it Tiger?
Yep.
Okay, just want to make sure I'm reading that right. And X-23, she's got the trigger scent. She's ready to kind of just make a mess of everything. But S.H.I.E.L.D. is not willing to give up Laura because of her murder spree due to the trigger scent earlier on. But we learned that we should put more faith in Laura, especially since that she's trying to get a grip on who she is and her relation to this this trigger scent and what it does to her. Some good fight scenes, some good moments between characters as they show what they think of Laura, that they love her and support her. There's an Iron Man suit. And a can of exploding beans.
Yes! Oh, you brought it up. Nice.
And lots of fighting and some really cool stuff and some good team dynamics on a team that I was like, okay, this is a weird X-Men team, but I will accept it. So, Steve, what did you think?
Gambit throws a kinetic can of beans. All right? And Hen says, damn, I might start carrying beans. That was worth my $4 right there.
But it'd be so heavy to carry cans of beans.
That between that and the Iron Man suit, that was just, it was two moments on top of some other really cool fight scenes. And, you know, a cool twist of a conclusion to the story arc. Mm-hmm. I will say though, like after six parts, I'm totally ready to move on from this stuff and go elsewhere. I want Gabby back.
Yeah.
I really want her. She's been kind of hanging out for a little while and, you know, she's still there. Her and Jonathan are still there, but I miss the dynamic between, mm-hmm. You know, Laura and Gabby and everything, and just the fun little outfits or weird situations that Jonathan gets up to and things like that, that it kind of reminded me a little bit of Captain Marvel and Kit.
Yeah.
And their dynamic. Different, but, you know, within the stratosphere of how they get along. And it added a level of kind of playful snark to the book.
Yeah, because Laura's not very snarky.
Right. And then, but like that worked against it, balanced the other stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, the more violent or the more, you know, rage inducing things. And then you had these like kind of at home moments where it was almost like a sitcom of, you know, the Wolverines do, 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 like, you know, and, but regardless, very cool. I have a question though. I'm just full of questions tonight.
Yeah.
Is Tom Taylor leaving the book? Because I feel like I heard somewhere, I don't want to start anything.
I don't know. I don't pay close enough attention to my previews. I kind of just, you know, whatever the book is, I get it without looking to see who's doing it, which I probably should pay attention to that.
What, hey, you know what? Hey, Comixology, I know you listen to this podcast. Check it out. When somebody presses down on their iPad to see what page number the book is, it should also have the title of the book and the number of the issue.
That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, I know it might not exactly be like symmetrical, but that'd be really cool. You might want to think about that. What issue number is this?
18.
Okay. I'm going to look up 19 and see what happens.
Yeah. I will say that I love that Jonathan the Wolverine is on a harness when he's out in public.
Sure.
Just responsible pet ownership right there.
He's got to get his exercise.
Yep. Yeah, so Enemy of the State too. And Tom Taylor's been doing a good job on this series since the beginning. Really enjoyed this take on Laura, especially since Logan just came out, and now I'm like loving X-23 again, and then this issue comes out, and I'm like, yeah, all right, we're still here.
But here's the thing, I saw this and I don't remember where I saw it, but I know the Vision is coming back, Steve.
Oh, yes.
But not with Tom King.
All right. Well, I just got all new Wolverine. She gets a new costume and it's a number one on the upper right hand corner, and it is still Tom Taylor.
Okay. There you go. Tom Taylor. I'm sorry. Why am I thinking of Tom King? I'm thinking the other book. Not my fault. Sorry.
That's
rewind.
Okay.
Wrong Tom.
It's all good.
No problem.
Bob, why don't you tell us about the latest issue of Power Man and Iron Fist?
Yep, I'm actually going to run through three books in a row since nobody else read these little quirky books of mine. So it's Power Man Iron Fist number 14, which I think is the next to last issue of the team book. They'll have two.
Ooh.
Yeah, there'll be solo books for each, and David F. Walker and Sanford Green are doing the Luke Cage side.
Yay!
So there's that. Now this is the Danny and Luke and Senor Magico versus the magical Alex Wilder story, where he was trying to take over the Harlem gangs with the help of Mariah. And he has come up with a very old-fashioned gangland way of taking care of things. He's trying to get all the people hooked on this drug he's come up with. It's called Redemption, which is actually made from demon's blood. So we're into this. It's the street magic thing, so that's why you need Senor Magico. But Dr. Voodoo's in the house, too. So I shouldn't have spoiled that, but for fans of Dr. Voodoo or Brother Voodoo before that, you're going to want to get this issue to see where this heads to next time around. It's just always a heck of a lot of fun at putting Luke and Danny into interesting situations that are they're quite over their heads. In this case, they are. As with some of the other issues in this series, it pulls into play threads from way back. So we go all the way back to the first couple of issues here to their old office manager, Jenny, and Mariah, and how that plays itself out, and a tremendous cliffhanger ending. So if this series is coming to an end, it is coming to an end in a glorious, glorious way. Silver Surfer number 9, Dan Slott, Michael and Laura all read, as usual, using a run of mostly single-issue stories, Dan Slott and the Allreds have just really created a saga that can be read in one-issue chunks or the whole thing and just immerse yourself in the relationship between Norm Rad and Dawn Greenwood. After the Surfer brought Dawn and her estranged mom back together and didn't go well, they wanted to go off into space and just be shown stuff. So they come upon a solar system where the first three planets are just ruined. They've been completely wiped out from global warming, misuse, ruins everywhere. And they get to the fourth planet, which is a paradise. And while they're on this paradise, Dawn happens to mention that she sort of needs to use the facilities. So we get into a lovely discussion of how that's done on other places. While that's going on, it's discovered that the reason this planet is perfect is they've discovered something, that if they all exist as holograms, they don't use up all the resources. That leads to a real problem, which I'll spoil it only because it's on the cover, where Dawn is now a hologram too. And we have to sort out how that all works. We end up with, as with all these issues, there's humor, there's cosmic craziness, there's some interesting ideas put forth, and just a ton of heart. And we have a last line that I'm not going to ruin. So you'll have to read that for yourself. Look, it is a reason I vote for this for the best series every year, because you should be reading it. Trust me on Silver Surfer, and please read them physically. Read the real books. No matter what Joey thinks, you should read the real book. No, read them however you'd like, but know that there's a special thrill to opening up a Mike and Laura Allred two-page spread in all its glory. Then there's Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 18, North Erica Henderson. It's the follow-up to Doreen getting her new flying suit from Melissa Morbeck, the rich lady who loves to help out superheroes and who has a chicken named Alfredo, and who also has two full-size grizzly bear butlers named Mr. Bettany and Mr. Edwin. So she has dueling Jarvis butlers. Doreen brings Chipmunk Hunk and Coy Boy to come see Melissa because, well, as Tomas says, there are flying chipmunks. And if there aren't flying koi, there are flying fish. So why not? Well, it turns out Melissa may have ulterior motives. And we end up, she can talk to lots of animals in her own special way. It's a little different than the others. And it looks like there's going to be a war of the animals coming.
Ooh.
Ooh, it looks gets very serious near the end. If you can, you can think about, you know, gibbons and leaping raccoons being threatening. But they still are in the hands of Erica North, particularly when they're all marching on Times Square. And they're coming down next to a restaurant called Marvel Chow, under the sign for a play called Wiccan. It looks like it's starring Wiccan from the Young Avengers and Hulkling. Maybe that's the show that Joey is going to see tonight.
It could be. It could be.
It could very well be. So that's my quick run through some of Marvel's smaller little books.
Excellent. Excellent. We have a few indie books to hit on tonight. Steve, you read a new number one this week.
I did. I read the Grass Kingdom number one from a dude you might have heard of named Matt Kint. And what? The Peter Panzerfaust artist, Tyler Jenkins.
Love his art.
Yeah. You know, I gotta tell you, if Matt Kint didn't, like, kind of hang out with him and maybe drop a few watercolors on these panels, I'd be real surprised, because the presentation, the watercolor presentation of the book, is very reminiscent of Kint's stuff that I've seen in the past. Mind management and whatnot. So presentation-wise, very in line with some of his other stuff. Quite gorgeous. If you like kind of the, like, defunct scribbly watercolor style, which I do, so there you go. It's an interesting book, though. I've read a lot of Matt Kint stuff, and I usually take to his stories right away, maybe because this is presumably going to go on for a little while. I think it's an ongoing. I don't know how I feel about it. I've been thinking about it for the last couple of days, and I don't know where to come down. It's basically about a sordid history of this land and the tribes and these people. And one day a woman is kind of taken hostage by one of the tribesmen and is forced to live a life that she doesn't want to live. And they kind of paint this picture of that things like this have happened on this land, have always happened, and are a thing that will continue to happen unless something changes. And what it amounts to is you kind of watch the history of this land from it being kind of indigenous territory to, you know, modern, semi-modern day trailer parky kind of thing. And it's a closed community. And the main story focuses between one of the lawmen and a trespasser. And they're kind of painting this Hatfields and McCoys situation for the community and the neighboring town, where, like, it's understood that the people that live in the Grass Kingdom it's been their land for over 100 years. And even though they don't technically own it, they lay claim to it just by, like, kind of settlers' rights kind of thing. And the people in the neighboring town don't necessarily agree. And methinks that by the end of the book, you come to find out that they did something a while back that kind of harkens back to the beginning of the book, that is going to possibly start a war between the two territories.
Hmm.
Okay, so there you have the
Yeah, go ahead. There's good ideas in there, but
that's... Go ahead.
Yeah, but you don't sound overly thrilled yet.
I'm not, and that's kind of like... It's okay. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's confusing, because when history dictates that you like somebody's stuff all the time, every time, and then something comes out and you're kind of like, I need a little bit more to get me, like, really invested. Like, I can see where you're going with this. I hate to presume that I know Matt Kint's story, what he has planned. That's kind of rude. But it's just with the pieces of the puzzle that I have, I'll frame it this way, I can kind of see the writing on the wall for a few things.
Okay.
And I like those things. I just, the tone of the book and kind of the town itself is very drab in like the daily goings on. And I don't know if until like the powder keg gets lit that I'm really that invested on what's going on just yet. So in my personal experience, it was odd to leave something of his feeling unsure about whether or not to check out the next issue or wait till it's collected and see, you know, kind of the idea and the setup all at once so that it can get me jazzed for whatever the following arc might be. You know, sometimes you need like a good chunk of it, like the engine's cold and it's got to get, you know, it's got to get burning a little bit for you to get comfortable, that kind of thing. Wait for the heat to come on. So I don't know. It's weird. I like my pull list is so tailored to what I like to read that when I feel indifferent about something, it kind of blows my mind a little bit. Yeah. So
particularly from a favored creator, so to speak. Yeah,
absolutely. Like I have almost all of his stuff in like nice hardcover editions. I've read even some of the, you know, the earlier things, and to one degree or another, I always walk away from his stuff. Maybe I'm not in love with it, but I definitely take away more positives than negatives, you know, in the end. And I suspect that'll be the case with this. I just, this was the first time where I walked away kind of being like, you know, rather than like bobbing my head and being like, yeah, when's number two coming out? So
interesting.
You know, still love Matt Kent. Art was very pretty in its own, you know, kind of doodly scratchy way. So yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I'm probably talked about it enough that I'm going to check out the next issue one way or another. So
you convince yourself. I like it.
I do that all the time. I do that. Just wait until I'm the host. It's going to be a disaster. I'm going to read everything.
It's all good. It's all good. Bob, what is this History of Comics book?
The four color comic book History of the Comics is from IDW, and it's Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy, who also do Action Philosophers, which they've done a few of. This is a redo with some additions to their original comic book History of the Comics that came out in 2012. It's even available as a trade, but that was in black and white.
Hmm.
So this issue in particular, issue number four, takes in the years 1947 to 1954 and is subtitled Fears and Horrors.
Hmm.
And it covers the post-war call for censorship of comic books, Dr. Wortham, the Comics Code. We get into Bill Gaines, the horror and science fiction at EC, MAD, the congressional hearings, how the code eventually produced some really bland books in the late 50s and early 60s that Dr. Wortham thought were even worse than the books they replaced, because now the violence was so bloodless and without consequence, it was more harmful to children than it was before. It is laid out in a wonderfully cartoony way, but it does not skimp on any of the real history. As someone who's read a lot about this period, the dramatis personae, so to speak, are all there in all their good and ill in all sorts of ways. The first issue came out in November, I guess, and that covered the years 1898 to 1938. Actually, it goes all the way back to cave paintings, to sort of action one. Second issue was The Rise of the Superheroes. Third one was Our Artists at War, the war years. And this will keep going. I had been aware of the other book before and never sort of picked it up. Maybe it was the black and white that confused me. And I saw this on the shelf when I was in the store the other day. And I said, I started thumbing through it. And I need to have this. I will definitely buy the trade collection of this. And this will go up on my shelf with all the other history books. This is a really quick and painless way to get a really deep and broad education on the major issues. If the other issues are issues in this series are like this, of all these things that you then will want to maybe do some deeper study as well. There are a lot of books on these sorts of things. For instance, we do get into some of the Wonder Woman psychology in here. So I know there's a book coming soon that you'll be able to read some about that. Because when you talk about Dr. Marston and Max Gaines and the hubbub back and forth over his book with Dr. Wortham. So, highly recommended the four-color comic book history of the comics, issue 4. I guess there will be 2 more to go, and then the trade will come from IDW. Probably end up being, the individual books are $4. The trade will probably be $16.95, and it'll be well worth it.
Excellent. I'm actually interested in picking up the trade once it comes out, and I'm kind of thinking about looking to see if there are any used black and white copies of it. Just go ahead and grab it.
I saw some today, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so they're out there.
Yes, they're out there.
Okay, so we've got one more comic to cover, and it's a show favorite, although I missed the boat and did not read it this week. So you guys go ahead, talk about Lady Killer 2, number 4.
And I'll let Bob take the reins.
Okay. All I know is I am so glad that I came upon the original miniseries solely because I was looking for something to put in Steven and my covers of the week. And I came across this sort of 50s, 60s magazine style illustration of a lady in a lovely dress with a kitchen covered in gore and blood and a dead body. What a perfect marriage of styles and the period. And I have a printer that I hang in my kitchen, which my comic book friends who come over are thrilled, and other people are sort of like, why would you want that in your kitchen? Because it's great! Look at it. And once introduced to the work of Joel Jones, now every line, whether it's drawn or in dialogue, I absolutely cherish. I am going to say I do hope that now that she's exclusive to DC that that doesn't preclude her from doing a Lady Killer 3, because we're only one issue from the end of this, and as we get into this dissolution, perhaps, of the partnership between Josie Schuller and her cleaner partner, Irving, who has his own history with Mother Schuller, Josie's mother-in-law, and that Irving brought a gift home, so to speak. I'll let Steve tell you what it is. I don't know that there's going to be an easy wrap-up to this story in one issue without there being some threads left over. What do you think, Steve?
Well, when was the last time that we got... What was the last Lady Killer 2, number 3? About 2 months ago?
It's probably 6-7 weeks, yeah.
Okay. So this is one of those books that... Like, we're away from it for a while, and I always get nervous when we come back to a book and I'm not going to remember what was going on. But with Lady Killer, it doesn't happen, because the book is so good that it just pulls you right back into the story, and your memory just snaps to attention. And everything that's happening, it's so, like, you're in the moment with these characters, and shit has hit the fan, so to speak.
Yes.
Because Irving has gone ahead, let's just say that he's gotten rid of somebody that he perhaps should not have gotten rid of.
He's trying to help.
Yeah, you know, you do somebody a favor by taking somebody out and hope it works out for the best. But, you know, you should probably get the details before you go ahead and do something like that.
Yeah.
And I was sad, though, because I was reading it and I'm like, wait a minute. There's only one issue left of, like, There needs to be more. Yeah. There has to be more. So I don't know what the stipulations of her contract are or how long it will be. I don't think that this is the last that we will see of the series at all.
I sure hope so. As much as I loved the last one that she did with Jamie Rich, this one that is solely Joel Jones's voice as writer and artist, I don't want to say better, but there's a different vibe to it that is still the same. They're still the same characters, and their relationships have deepened. There's something else going on, and there's a freedom to the art. The 4 or 5 pages of the killing at the nightclub are some of the most stunning things I have ever seen. As we play, and the use of color, which is Michelle Madsen, along those sequences as well, we get to a spectacular finale that speaks to a new partnership that might be very interesting. Just just amazing. Mara, you're going to love this when you catch up.
When I get it, yeah.
So, have you been buying the singles, or are you trade waiting on this one?
I have been review copy reading.
Ah.
So single issues as it goes on. This week was a week that I forgot to dive into my review copy folder for the episode. So
That's okay. Yeah. Because you need to buy the trades on these anyway. Because I bought all the single issues, and I had to buy the trade because it has the cover galleries, the variants, sketchwork, and all the ideas. It's Dark Horse, so they always do a great job with those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
true.
And always at a great price too. So
exactly.
Yep.
Bob, you've got a couple news items you want to hit on for this episode.
Well, sure. First thing I'd like to say is we're going to wish Stan Lee the best of health. He had to cancel out on appearing at the Big Apple Comic Con this week due to health issues. A lot of people were very, very disappointed after they missed him at the big New York Comic Con, because that was insane, as we all saw. And this was they thought would be their last chance to see Stan in New York. He is 93, and apparently his busy schedule took its toll. Now, the con did the right thing. Anyone who had tickets to one of those signing events or had gotten stuff pre-booked to have pictures taken, so on and so forth, those were all refunded. They didn't refund anyone's actual tickets to the show unless someone made a special case of saying, look, that's the only reason I came. And then they did make adjustments for those folks as well. Stan Lee's company, his booth was still there, and there were lots of pre-signed items. And from what I've heard, they were also selling things at a discount to try to make up for what had happened. So, you know, good job all around, and let's all wish the best for Stan on that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There was also a story that broke just as we were coming in, where Marvel and their PR staff have come up with the reasoning behind why Jane Foster is not in Thor Ragnarok. And it's lame, frankly. Sorry to be colloquial, but I just have to. It's obvious that Natalie Portman, you know, having been in two giant mega franchises, may have had enough and wants to do some other things. And that's probably the real reason she's not in the film. But they are now saying, well, it's so Thor can have a relationship with the new Valkyrie, because they're more equal, because, well, Valkyrie is the Valkyrie, who is just running around and, like, punching stuff. And wait, so someone who does brilliantly amazing astrophysics is not the equivalent of someone who can hit stuff?
Boo.
Yeah. So, sorry, Kevin Feige, you stepped in it this time. Not major, because I don't think Ms. Portman was going to be in the movie anyway, but... And as they point out in the article, which is from IO9, we'll give them the credit for this, is where we saw it, is we have the same sort of off-camera deal that we had with Gwyneth Paltrow's Pepper Potts in Age of Ultron. So we've now lost two very, very smart ladies from the Marvel Universe really quickly. So we'd better hope in Ant-Man and the Wasp comes up really big sciencey stuff. We want some goodness there. That's what I'm saying.
I'm wondering if that's just a product of casting actresses with big names. Because Natalie Portman, I mean, that's a big name. Gwyneth Paltrow is one as well. I don't remember the name of the Wasp's actress. So maybe it's not a big thing. If I can think of it real
Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it is, that they didn't think that there would be longevity to some of these movies, so they decided to pull in someone with, you know, an acting pedigree of some sort to help boost it over the edge. And what happens is they have power to say, I'm done. I'm good.
And good for them to exercise that if they feel they're not being utilized properly, if such is the case. But they do sign the gentlemen stars of these movies up to giant 9-picture deals that also allow them to go off and make their own little movies. Hollywood's double standard at work?
Maybe.
I don't know. Let's hope not. Let's just say I'm being crabby. But, you know, the movie does look interesting, but I think we're going to miss Jane Foster.
Yeah, definitely.
Not to mention Kat Dennings' character.
I got to tell you, Bob, I don't know how much I'm going to miss Jane. I miss the idea of Jane. I don't know that I'm gonna miss her being in the next movie. Her character has not been the strongest aspect of that series for me, particularly in the second one. She kind of just felt like she was there. She was almost like a conduit for the big bad to come out, and that was almost it, unless I'm remembering it wrong.
I'll say I loved all the stuff on Asgard.
Okay.
And with Thor's mom and their interaction and
I do remember
all the science stuff. Yeah, I thought there was some really nice moments there that, to me, let there be more than just in the first movie where she facilitated Thor coming to Earth in its own way and how that all worked itself out. She was there to see what happened. And here, she had her own storyline. So I was hoping for more, not less, and now get none.
Yeah.
Maybe I've got to go back and watch it again.
They're both very, very good films in very different ways.
Mm-hmm. I remember, the first one is very much a comedy. I laugh my ass off every time I watch that movie.
So good.
All I really, what I remember from the second one is, was it Malekith and all the Thor and Loki stuff mm-hmm. that continues. There's some really good stuff there. I don't know. It's been a while. Maybe I need to revisit it. That's not the first movie that I throw in when I do my little Marvel movie marathons every now and again.
I think the underbelly of the Marvel universe cinematically and that people tend to forget about, the two Thor movies, and I really love the Edward Norton Hulk. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. Certainly that wasn't in the Ang Lee, Eric Bana one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Cap and the Avengers and certainly the first Iron Man, Guardians now people think about, pretty are these going to come together. I think there are lots of charms in the two Thor pictures and Hulk.
All right. Bob, you also wanted to mention some of the stuff that we are going to be reading for the next week.
Yeah, because what we want to do is, you know, Steve and I and Joey and Mara have been, we'll get to some of that too, as Mara is leaving after tonight. Folks, we'll be ready. We want you to send her cards and flowers and letters and stuff electronically, if not physically. I'm saying. We send each other an email. We're reading this and we try to get that going early so we all know what we're doing. That's how we coordinate some of this. We don't all get to read everything that everybody else reads, but this way we have some basis of our conversation. So we want to include you guys in that by putting out here ahead of time some of the things that Steve and I and Joey and everybody else we're going to start adding here as we move forward are going to be reading. So Steve, for you, what is your highlight few books for today's poll?
Oh, we got a dog.
Yeah,
I don't know what is going on.
She
so
wants
sorry.
To know why we're not asking her what she's reading.
Yeah.
She doesn't read.
Oh, not that you know of. She waits till you go to sleep.
Hey, she was chewing on one of my Tolkien books. I think it was a Silmarillion.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah. And Matt was like, I think she just wants you to read to her. So I pulled
She's still
book
alive?
Out. Yeah. Well, you know, she's a puppy. So I pulled it out and I started reading. No. She was chewing on The Two Towers. She was chewing on like a nice edition of it. So I pulled it out and started reading about Boromir's death to her. And she just stops and sits. And I'm like,
fell asleep.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Sorry about that. I don't hear her anymore. So we're good.
Definitely checking out Batwoman number one, yeah, Marguerite Bennett, for sure. I Hate Fairyland is coming back, y'all.
Wow.
Third arc. Go buy volumes 1 and 2 right now and go and then read 11. That book is so amazing. If you haven't added it to your pull list, at least check out the first trade. It's super cheap. It's super fun. And it's Scotty Young doing what he does best. Let's see. I know there's something that Bob's going to bring up that I'm very excited about. I have something to tell you, Bob, after the show.
Okay.
Can't talk about it here. I'm upset that I'm buying, but presently cannot read Spider-Man because Spider-Man is working in conjunction with Spider-Gwen, which I've collected every damn issue of and haven't read yet. I know. And at this point, it's like something like 16, 17 issues or whatever it is. And like just like I've been doing with the Wonder Woman and Detective and catching up on stuff, that's going to be like the binge read of 1 week to the next and then come back with all my thoughts kind of thing. Then we got Hellcat coming out too. And the last one that I'll mention real quick is Super Sons, number two, the follow-up to that really awesome issue that came out, probably one of the standout issues of the year from the Rebirth stuff. So very excited to see where that goes. I might throw in an indie or two, but I know there's something that Bob's going to mention that I am like is at the top of my list. So go ahead, Bob.
Well, Hellcat number 16, which might be the last issue. If not, it's the next to last issue. Based on what we had the last time around, where Patsy had the mystic flu or whatever was going on, I need to know how that ends. They're apparently making her chicken soup in this issue, so that's very good. We have Ms. Marvel. Always a highlight for me.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Dauterman back on Thor, and it's the Asgard Shi'ar War with Odin's son back with the ultimate Thor's hammer, and promises to be some real throwing down in that one.
Ooh.
I have an Avengers trade paperback coming, but not the superheroes, but Steed and Mrs. Peel. It's a comic strip from the 60s that I've only seen glimpses of through the last 40 years or so. And now collected in a trade paperback.
Nice. Like,
yes, I have to own that. And then depending on what store you shop in, it is Bloodstained Volume 2.
Yes.
This week or next.
Okay. I believe it's this week.
Linda Shage is saying it is this week. Amazon says it is next week. My comic store says it's next week, as does Diamond. But Midtown Comics says it's this week.
I know with Amazon and Barnes & Noble, they don't put the books out for a week. Like, they don't get the books until a week after Congress.
Yeah, I think that's in their part of their deal, that to do the trade paperbacks, they need to wait 1 week out.
Right. Now, I may walk into the store tomorrow/today, and it could be there because Diamond fouled up.
Yeah.
Right.
But they were saying to my store, no, next week. Next week. It's like, all right, we pre-ordered that like 3 months ago. Either way, yes, I am very, very excited to see what happens to Ellie and Dr. Stein this time around, because they basically just met as we ended the last volume. So I can't wait to see what new shenanigans they can get into.
Indeed. That is my most anticipated read of the week. I can't wait to get my hands on that. Hopefully it comes out.
Yeah, well, it's coming out. It's just which day is it coming out? So you may be ahead of me by a week, but we're on the same page nonetheless.
I wonder, because I want a physical copy of that. I don't necessarily want to buy it digitally. I will if I have to, but it would be nice if that ended up on the shelf. It's weird that so many different outlets are saying different things.
Yeah.
But then again, I'll check solicit sometimes for the week of, and they still don't know who the artist and writer are. It's like, to be decided. Like, really? Yeah, you better figure it out.
It's already done.
Yeah. Who are you? Who'd you write the check to? You know?
Yeah, seriously. Look that up. Just make it out to cash.
Yeah.
My pull list. I'm looking at a picture of my books that my comic guy sent me. I'm still reading Odyssey of the Amazons.
How's that going?
I'm not happy, but I'm gonna stick it out. I mean, I stuck it out for like quite a bit of the Finch run, so I can do this one too.
Okay.
It's a mini series, so. Poe Dameron, new Poe Dameron issue. All-Star Batman, which has been really good. Superman, which the cover kind of gives away the big bad guy, but that's all right.
Uh-oh.
Oh, really? I haven't seen the cover yet.
It sure does, right there.
Oh.
And then Trinity, in addition to a lot of the books you guys have already brought up.
So, I'm gonna get that at some point. I should have grabbed that during the DC sale.
Trinity?
Yeah.
It's a weird one, but I like it. It's really pretty. And the arc ended. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how this one, this new arc plays out.
So. I may take a shot at Vampirella number one by Paul Cornell. Even though there was a hubbub over a variant cover for the third issue that there's been lots of back and forth on, the zero issue, which was a quarter that I bought a few weeks back, it sort of pulled into play all of Vampirella's origins into one place. And it's sort of the Greg Rucka Wonder Woman model as how do we come to something that can be all of it, but be true to the original. So it's really going to depend on where the art goes. So many of those, the Dynamite books in the wake of what Gail Simone did to Red Sonja, where they had Kate Leth doing Vampirella and they backed away from cheesecake stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Were all a lot of fun, and it looks as if they're backing away from all that. So I'm intrigued, but I'm going to have to look at it. But I'm thinking it's on my list with a big question mark.
All right. So, hey, so that's kind of what we'll be reading in the future. This is my last episode, so you won't hear my thoughts on Odyssey of the Amazons again. But spoiler, I don't like it. and it's kind of interesting because I've been thinking about my comic reading habits moving forward, and at the beginning of the year as a resolution I kind of thought to myself, oh, I should move to trades because that's typically how I enjoy my comics the most, reading them in story chunks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can do that. I can still do that. And you know, that was the big problem for me not doing that was I would not be relevant for our podcast because no one wants to hear a story that's 6 months old, or in DC's case, yeah, previously, you know, a year and a half old and things like right. that. But so that's something that I am looking forward to. I'm kind of shifting my reading patterns with the next previews order I put in to more trades. And of course, still picking up Wonder Woman month to month and my Star Wars issues month to month.
So I know Steve will have something to say. I will too. I want to begin. I got a note from Carolyn Coca.
Okay.
For you, Mara. And she said, it was an honor to be on Talking Comics with you and a pleasure to hear you every week. And I will miss both. And then she wrote, so she'd better be ready for our next Star Wars podcast. perhaps on May the 4th.
Oh, it's coming up.
So you two guys have to touch base on that one, I think. So thank you, Carolyn.
Yes, thank you.
Steve, do you want to jump in here before I launch into something?
Before you take it home?
Yeah.
I want to give Mara the floor to see if you want to say anything first, or am I throwing you under the bus?
No, that's fine. First off, golly, sorry, my cat has been very needy lately, and she just knocked all my study cards off my desk, but c'est la vie. It's been fun, you know, coming week to week and talking about something that I really enjoy with people I really enjoy as well, getting new perspectives and pushing myself to read more and more comics. I did my comic count for the year last year. 2,707
wow.
issues.
Wow.
For the year. And, you know, in this year I started counting and then I decided, you know what, Mara, you are obsessing about things. It's time to stop note-taking everything. It's time to stop writing down every comic you read. So I read Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers of Victory without writing down the comics. So I'm like, okay, we'll see how this moves on. But, you know, for me, trying to get back to getting into the studying and pulling that information for comics into the field of research and therapeutic uses and how we can build rapport with kids who have seen all the Marvel movies and just diving into that 100%. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to you know, coming back to the website and doing some writing and imparting some psychology wisdom in relation to the comics we read and love. And I'm going to miss being on every week. I don't know what I'm going to do with my Tuesdays. Actually, I do. I'm going to be studying. But it will be something I'm going to miss. So thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Aww, the best. Oh, boy. What to say? I guess the first thing I should say is thank you. Because without you, Mara, without your leadership and without you coming in to really, you know, take the show over and kind of save us from the fire a little bit, and to have done it so well, and you know, your personality, you've always been just a pleasure to talk with and be friends with over the years and stuff like that. One of, you know, our oldest supporters and all those things, like the genesis and the evolution of your relationship to Talking Comics has been really awesome to see, and will continue to be, as you know, as we go forward and stuff like that. But as somebody who's taken on a bunch of different roles and done them all so well, my hat is off to you. And I am, you know, I'm excited to be taking over the show. As I've said in the past, we've got, you know, a couple of really cool things planned. I'm a little nervous. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, especially with so much stuff going on right now, it's kind of really hard to focus. And, you know, we're going to just kind of dive in and see what happens. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have notes and I'm going to do my thing and whatever. But following you is a tough act. And I really hope to kind of honor all of the hard work that you've put in and bring the show into, you know, new territory and do everything that you and Bobby have laid the foundation for and do it justice. And just, you know, I can't thank you enough for all of the conversations, all of the enthusiasm that you've had for the things, all the uniqueness that you brought to this show over the past several months. And yeah, just, you know, an eternal gratitude from my end for you just adding to my week every week and making it a good time, making Tuesday night a good time.
Thanks, so, Steve. I think you're going to do great. I think you're going to do great. I've heard the plans. They're good ones.
Yeah. I'm just being, you know, self-deprecating and nervous. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't want to whatever. But I'm very excited. And I think we're just going to have, you know, going to continue to have fun. And going to be some interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and you'll be back. You'll be back at some point.
From time to time, yeah.
You can't stay away.
I can't really.
And best of luck in all of your studying and your endeavors. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Super, super, super proud of you for all the hard work that you've done so far.
Thanks.
And that's me.
Okay.
Here we go.
Mara, we know that you're not leaving the Talking Comics family, as legendary runs will continue. As you said, you'll be doing some writing for us again, which is always welcome. You do such great work. And here's hoping time will allow you to drop by here every now and again for important academic and social topics like the new Wonder Woman movie. You've also talked again about doing some writing about manga and anime and perhaps even a semi-regular Star Wars roundup. So this is certainly not farewell for your participation in what we do. As you've been here since the very, very beginning, it would be hard to have our masthead not have the name of Mara Wood on it. You know, although you won't be sitting in the host chair after tonight, your presence will always be felt. You brought a new erudition to the proceedings, and coupled with a boundless enthusiasm for what the comics medium can be when it's at its best, you gave our listeners and your co-hosts new insights into the impact these four color fantasies could have. We wish you all the luck for your burgeoning career, as well as extending our deepest gratitude for taking the helm in some rough seas and guiding us into calmer, although sometimes uncharted, waters. Thank you for being a great host, but more, an even better friend. Mara, with much love, we wish you all the best.
Aw, thank you, Bob. Yeah, and I'll still be in touch, and of course our listeners can follow me on Twitter. I'm trying not to be as obsessive about things. You know, that's part of stepping away and making sure, like, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. So I took the Twitter app off my phone. but it's open in my browser all the time on my phone. So I'm still within a quick tweet. And if you're going to be in San Diego for Comic-Con this year, there may or may not be a Wonder Woman psychology panel that I may or may not be on.
Oh my God.
Hashtag already bought the plane tickets. Hashtag looking for hotel.
Yo, you and I are going to tear it up at SDCC. That's awesome. I'm going too.
So surprise.
Sweet.
And you know, so still continuing to be involved in the comics, community, still being involved with Talking Comics. Like I said, Legendary Runs is still going. And it's just kind of, you know, got to get this psychology thing done. Got to get it underway. So, but like I said, it's been great. I love the show. I love what it brings each week. I like that the comics we talk about are the ones that we're most passionate about and not feeling some sort of quota to talk about the biggest books that are coming out, just what strikes our fancy as fans. And that's what this show is, put on by fans for comics fans. I love the community that has been built by this show and the site, and I'm excited to get deeper back into that community. I felt a little bit apart from it in this role. So like I said, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we're going to try to do going forward, is a little bit more of a try to establish a bit of a stronger connection, some more interactivity, hearing, you know, from you guys every week, asking you questions. You know, we'll get into all of that when we do the change. You know, we'll discuss all of these plans going forward. But right now is not the time. Right now we want to focus on Mara and just wish you the best and you know, appreciate everything that you've brought to the show.
Thank you. So that's going to be it for this week's Talking Comics and for me for the time being. But as always, you can send us comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are on Twitter @talkingcomics. Check out talkingcomicbooks.com for everything. Lots of articles going up, as well as other podcasts. We just finished Seven Soldiers of Victory by Grant Morrison. What the heck was going on? was basically my response. Our next episode is Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel.
Oh.
Which I know what's going on in that one.
There you go.
So I'm pretty excited about that one and moving forward with some of that work. Of course, there's also a D&D podcast, Talking Movies, Talking Games, Talking Valiant. I know you games folks are all about the Switch now and Zelda, so.
So good.
Yeah,
so good.
I have not seen Matt in like hours every day. I know exactly what he's doing.
It is without a doubt my favorite game that I've played in a very, very long time. I am doing things in this game that I haven't done in over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So very, very good.
Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, Steve, where can our listeners find you?
The easiest way to get in touch with me is to find me on Twitter. I am @dead_anchorus.
And, Bob, where can listeners find you?
At the bottom of a glass of Maker's Mark that I'm just pouring for myself. I'm drowning myself. I'm @BobRyer @talkingcomicbooks.com.
And I am on Twitter @Negamaramon.
Yeah, there it is.
There you go.
Nice.
So, for Bob...
Bye-bye, Mara. Thank you so much.
And Steve.
We'll see you next week.
I'm Mara Wood. Until next time, to be continued.